This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show. You're listening to an exclusive podcast of Fight Back on Zoomer Radio, heard weekdays from noon to one. Now, Fight Back with Libby Znaimer on Zoomer Radio.
Good afternoon and welcome. It's Thursday, time to talk local politics and, of course, money. And for all that we've been talking about the dire situation in Toronto, Toronto needs money to shelter migrants, to build housing for people who cannot afford the exorbitant cost of home ownership here, to provide the basic services we all expect. Well, we are spending a seemingly bottomless pit of millions and millions more on soccer games. This week, we learned that the cost of the FIFA World Cup is going up by $80 million to $380 million. And believe me, I will be in shock if that number doesn't go up again. Now, the province has said it won't increase its share because of that. And by the way, its share is dependent on the federal government coming in. And this, even though Queen's Park and Ottawa will get the lion's share of the tax revenue, while Toronto will get only $3 million of it. So there's a deal for taxpayers. Invest $380 million and get $3 million back. But the city is still pleading poverty, and now they're reviving an old idea to get more cash, taxing parking spots on business property. Now, this is businesses are still struggling. Oh, and city staff want to charge downtown businesses double what they want to get from the suburbs. Now, if city staff, if any of you actually go into work at City Hall, you are in walking distance of the downtown core. And should you walk to the downtown core, you might notice that it's basically abandoned and it's almost empty. And maybe I would think that the staff would be working hard to try to attract people back to the downtown rather than coming up with policies that will make more of them stay away. What do you think? The numbers to call, 416-360-0740, toll free 1-866-740-4740.
And now, it's time to tune into the town.
And now let's go to Alex Blumenstein, co-founder of The Peak, Karen Stintz, CEO of Variety Village, and candidate in the upcoming, we don't know when, federal election, and David Crombie, former mayor of Toronto. Thanks so much for being with us, all of you. Let's talk about FIFA first. David, what do you make of it?
Well, clearly, it was a bad financial deal that was made at the time. I have not read it all, but as I understand it from comments made and reviews of it, there was wide open in terms of the inability to pin down other levels of government, and for sure allowed us to now get for a lot of money, six games only. The main action is going to be in British Columbia. It was a bad financial deal, even though some people, lots of people, would like to see FIFA here. It is a bad financial deal, and I'm not sure what can be done about it. There's two ways in which the mayor and the council now have before them. They can either try to convince other levels of government, which they're trying to do, or they have to find some way in which they can make more money out of the event. And in any case, what is not before us is the ability to say no. We've said yes, and we said yes badly.
Karen, I mean, I'm casting my mind back to when Olivia Chow first took power. She couldn't even see the deal. She wasn't allowed to. I mean, I'm sorry. I have a very hard time believing that with a change in administration that there is absolutely no way to get out of this, no way to say no to millions and millions more than the original estimates.
Yeah, and, you know, Libby, you've been consistently questioning whether or not this was the right move for the city, and on the side of not really sure that it was, and it just seems to be getting worse with every iteration. And initially, I was on the side of, you know, sometimes we need to do these things to, you know, bring the city together, to participate in these international events. We're not going to host an Olympics. That's never going to happen. But, you know, maybe this is something that we could really rally behind in promoting the city and building the unity and the excitement around the Cup. But I do share your concerns about the transparency of it, number one, the cost of it, number two, and also, you know, why the other levels of government wouldn't understand that the benefits that they're getting through our investment aren't material enough to give some of it back to the city. So I'm really hoping those conversations haven't concluded, because it doesn't make any sense.
I think that sums it up. It doesn't make any sense. Alex, do you, I mean, some of it, you know, frankly, I just find it very hard to believe. I know that the former mayor, John Tory, is a huge booster of this stuff. But, you know, he's not a stupid guy. And it's hard to imagine that there's no recourse for us.
I mean, he's not a stupid guy, but he is a politician. So make of that what you will. No offense to the other panelists. I don't know. This seems just at a basic level a bit of a short change. I mean, other countries got to host the World Cup, and now Canada has to share it with the U.S. and Mexico. So even this idea of, like, rallying around it, we're hosting a few non-consequential games. Like, I'm sure it'll be fun to go to, but it's not something to rally around when it's such a small piece of it. And then they talk about the economic benefit. First of all, I don't generally believe these economic benefit studies.
Oh, they are baloney.
They're baloney, right? And then it's like, who are the people who benefit from this, right? It's like, it's not like we all benefit. We don't all, you know, save a little bit of money on our taxes or get a check. Like, there's, you know, major food vendors at BMO Field benefit, I guess, like Aramark, right? Good for them. Fantastic. And I'm sure it creates some jobs. But Toronto's a big city. It's got a lot going on. We don't need this injection for $300 million of economic activity. Maybe if we were a depressed town, sure.
Well, again, like you bring up those always, they make me a little nutty because they're done by consulting and lobby firms that are hired for the purpose to make this deal look good. And I mean, exactly what you're saying. So the ice cream vendor down the street is going to sell three times as many ice creams. Let's put a million on that. David, do you believe that there is actually absolutely no recourse on this?
Well, I'm not the expert to know. I could only read what people who are experts say, and they say we can't get out of it. So even people I know who are violently opposed to it think we have to go ahead with it. Yeah, and much of this is, I mean, what's the explanation? If I had to have one explanation, these are vanity projects. And these are vanity projects whereby people fix other people's egos so they can think they're doing the right thing. They're not. And it speaks to their vanity, not to their political sense or indeed to their financial sense.
That sums it up. I'm going to take a call from Tom in Mississauga. Hi there, Tom.
Hi, everybody. I was going to say, even though I'm a huge soccer fan, I wouldn't have went for it. I could watch soccer anytime. I could watch it on TV. I've met people who say, I'm going to go to the game, and they're dirt poor. They're willing to pay $2,000 a ticket or something. That's how stupid they are, right? But anyway, the city and all the governments, they waste a lot of money on even worse things than this anyway, like giving billions of dollars to foreign countries all the time. And then this whole thing about building housing is not the government's business. If you got migrants here, put them in Sudbury, put them where you don't put them in the most expensive land in Canada around Toronto, right? Especially if you're not working. Like, my daughter works in a financial district. She should be living there, not out in the Oakville-Mississauga border, right?
That's pretty nice, too.
Yeah.
Thanks for your call. And he's talking about watching it on TV. Now, there have been a lot of times I live not far from St. Clair West, which is Corso Italia, and there's lots of Brazilian and Latin American restaurants there. So even when it's on TV, you can go and watch it in a bar, and all of those businesses do great business from people coming to watch it on their screen and ordering food. I mean, you don't even need to have, as what Alex called, these inconsequential games, because people in Toronto get behind their countries of origin when it comes to soccer, Karen.
Yeah, and that's true. But, you know, I do think that some... You know, David referred to them as vanity projects. I think there is a place for vanity projects, to be honest. And because the excitement that it generates can be contagious. Like, you know, when the Raptors won, that was a great moment for our city. And if the Blue Jays ever win or the Leafs ever win, it's going to be another great moment for our city. Now, those are spontaneous events, of course, that don't require $381 million. But nonetheless, those are the things that bring people together. And so on this one, I don't know how this one came to be the beast it is, but I don't know if we can get out of it. But you know, that being said, I still think that there's work the city can do with other levels of government to share the cost of this event.
Well, as we saw with the other things, notably the money for sheltering migrants at the 11th hour, the federal government does come through, the province does come through, the mayor seems to be good at getting that cash at the end of the day. We'll see if it applies to this. Let's move along the executive committee, this parking thing. Alex, I remember, I think it was maybe around 2015 that this first came up, and it's the idea of taxing the parking spaces on a business's property. It can add up very quickly. Alex was pointing out our parking lot, and I was saying that it's kind of a maxim that one of the ways to attract good employees is to provide parking. But Alex, you think this is a great idea.
I think it is a great idea. And that may be true. I mean, having a parking lot is a great benefit, but also there's a cost to that benefit. And the cost is having land that's not used at its maximum value, right? The land that we have here and we have across the street and we have all over the city that are just sitting as flat lots with spots in them could be used for higher value uses. And some of them are being
converted
to that.
All the bylaw officers come and have lunch at our picnic table. I mean, that's important.
Of course it is. Of course it is. And to your point about, you know, the downtown being empty, I don't think it's empty because there's a lack of parking. The parking's there now. So I don't see it as the issue. And perhaps, maybe, if we, you know, bring in another $120 million or whatever the estimate was each year, we could spend that money on revitalizing downtown and bringing people back downtown. So I'm all in favor of it.
Karen, what do you think? I mean, I just think that especially this disparity between what they want to charge in the suburbs and downtown, I think that in the situation we're in, that's not a good plan. The vacancy rate for commercial real estate is huge, and that might be something that will just make it huger.
Well, precisely. And it's not as if this, you know, parking tax is in isolation from all the other taxes that people are paying. And so it's fine to say, you know, all the best taxes are ones that someone else has to pay. So there's a strong likelihood that, you know, and I run a charity. So, and I have, there's 47 spots that I have in my charity. Am I going to have to now charge people to pay for parking, or do I get exempted because of my charitable status?
And all ask
these,
your accountant.
I don't know. Right. And then all of these strip malls that are on, like, that are along Lawrence and that are providing a service to the community, are they going to have to pay? Because they're probably not going to be able to pass that cost on to people who are pulling in to go to the restaurant or pulling in to go to the local convenience store, the Tim Hortons. So it's great to say, but then how do you implement it? Are you going to make people put meters down? Are you going to add it to their property taxes? Like, and so all of that, and then, you know, then it becomes, why am I doing business in Toronto? Because it doesn't make any more sense anymore. Because the money that I'm getting from the product I'm selling does not offset the taxes I need to pay for what I to have the privilege of operating in the city. So there is a point at which it breaks down, and I think we're at that point with this parking tax, because it's so hard to implement. It doesn't make any sense. It will be a complete burden on businesses, because the ability to pass it on to consumers is very challenging. And you're going to have to exempt a whole bunch of us, because churches aren't going to pay, not-for-profits aren't going to pay. And so how does that all get reconciled? So
and
I just
strip
think
malls,
they should just stop.
They've even said that they want to make sure that strip malls are okay. So it looks like putting the burden on what are perceived as fat cats downtown. Meantime, right, it's hollowed out. It really is hollowed out, and businesses cannot convince employees to come back there. David, what do you think about this?
A couple of things. First of all, the city needs the money. Keep that before your very eyes, because it doesn't matter where they go in terms of collecting taxes, they're going to find opposition and complication. That's for sure. So it may not be a parking lot a year from now, but it's going to be something else. The city has been in bad shape financially. It's been put in bad shape financially during the last 10 years, and has to get out of the hole. So the first point is, it needs the money. Secondly, Karen, I think, is on to a good point, and that is that none of these things are uncomplicated, and therefore the administration of it may be more than the gathering in of the money. So I would hold my fire on it, yes or no, until you see actually how they're going to implement it. But should we say no and just not bother? We can't. We put ourselves in a hole by not taxing, by not having the guts to make sure that we had enough money for what we were spending, and now we're having to pay for.
Well, at the end of the day, businesses pay way more than residents, and they have a lot less of a say, because the politicians know that, you know, I don't vote in this ward here. So, Alex, do you think that that's the appropriate thing to tax, put all these requirements for money on businesses, and businesses that may be perceived as being rich, whether they are or not?
I mean, I think the I guess it's like, you know, the economic term, where is the incidence of the tax lie? I mean, the tax would be, I assume it would be implemented to the person who owns the land themselves, right? Would that be passed along? Perhaps, but maybe not, because even though these people who own land can continue to collect rent, and most of them are quite profitable on this, if it is true that the downtown is hollowed out, then they shouldn't be able to pass that along to their tenants, because the demand for that, like that's, you know, economics 101, is they shouldn't be able to pass along the incidence of that tax, right? So I think there's, I think it actually lies on the property owners who I'm not particularly concerned about. And then to address the strip mall issue and the smaller businesses, there is a carve out. It's anything below, I believe, 300 square meters, which is 10 parking spots, isn't subject to this tax. So it actually wouldn't hit those smaller lots particularly hard.
Okay. Karen, again, do you think that that strategy in general of putting the city's money woes onto business as opposed to residents, I mean, it's good politically if you're running, but do you think that's the right thing to do?
No, because ultimately it does come back to the viability of businesses, and then, or the ability of the business to pass it on to consumers, which is us. So we're just paying in a different way. And I, you know, when I think about the Costco, the Costco's and the Yorkdale. Like, how is Yorkdale, are they going to charge now for parking at Yorkdale? Or are they going to just pin that on to all the businesses that operate out of the mall? Or is Cadillac Fairview, out of the generosity of its heart, just going to cut a check to the city? So, like, which is the least likely option, right? And nobody takes the bus to Costco, right? Nobody does. Like, the entire business model of Costco is that you go there, you spend too much money, and you put it in your car and you drive away. So why would you put an extra burden when your entire business model relies on people driving? And so the city, I get, is desperate. They made decisions that maybe they shouldn't have made. But I just don't think you can continue to see businesses as this relentless pot of money and resources and finances that is going to make the city whole.
David?
Well, there's no government. There's a limit to for certain businesses. There's a limit beyond which they cannot go in terms of paying of taxes. I don't. There's no magic bullet. We'll keep chasing around this. The city needs the money. It has to find a way in which to do it. In some way, the public's going to pay, whether directly or indirectly. Karen's right.
Okay, let's take a couple of calls. I think people are still more concerned about the FIFA thing. So let's go to Arlene and Lindsay. Hi, Arlene.
Hi, folks. Anyways, why are there no escape clauses? In all these deals that go on, it always seems that, okay, we start off with a small amount and then they build up and they build up. When can they say, okay, this is too much, we're not doing it? They should have an escape clause on just about everything that the government does, but they don't. And I'm wondering, why aren't they?
Whose money are they spending?
Exactly. They're paying with taxpayers' money, which they think there's a money tree somewhere. Everybody does. In other words, okay, I'm going to, you know, dupe the government and keep taking more money and more money because I need more money, etc. But guess what, folks? It's a vicious circle, and you're going to keep paying and paying. And now we're in debt, etc., etc., and you're never going to get out of it.
Thanks, Arlene. Well, hopefully we will get out of it at some point. Let's hear from Pat in Toronto. Hi, Pat.
Well, Libby, we've missed a big opportunity, and I say this as I drive by the signs in front of places that are going to be redeveloped. We need to tax the bicycles, because we're all going to be riding bicycles in Toronto. Just look at what any of the proposals are. So that's going to save us the money. So, I mean, you know, I'm sorry, we should stop talking about money that's spent and talk about the money that we're not going to spend in the next budget. I mean, this is like the story that happened to Nortel. They got going on what had happened with their accounting 3 years earlier and took their eyes off what was happening today and went bankrupt. So, I mean, we should be learning some lessons from that. So
you're considering the FIFA money spent, even though we have no idea how much it's going to be?
Well, I mean, you know, that's the word we're getting, is that there's no ability to change it. And, you know, the reality is that politicians are so easy to spend other people's money. It is so, so, so easy. And, you know, one of the things that is good about what we have at the municipal level, you can't run a deficit, whereas at the provincial and federal level, we run billions of dollars of deficits and nobody says anything. So anyway, that's life.
Okay. Thanks for that. Let's go to John in Toronto. John, you have a better idea for collecting the taxes. We're waiting to hear it.
I hope it's bicycles.
Well, I'm going out on a limb here, but I think it's likely time that we revisit whether churches and religious entities start paying property tax. Plus, you know, they have a lot of land, and they might. It needs to be revisited. It would take somebody with a bit of guts to take action here, but I think it's time to take a look-see at this.
Oh, just turn them into condos. Thanks, John. I mean, if you drive by some of the big churches, I mean, they're huge parking lots. And sometimes they do charge money to park there, depending on what's happening there.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of churches have a lot of money, and it is one of these odd exemptions. I mean, I obviously understand where it comes from, but there's probably some more balance that can be done there. But you do see these churches, I mean, just religious involvements declined, and a lot of them have been turned into condos. It happens.
Yeah, but I think the condos are taxed.
Oh, yeah. No, exactly.
Might make some sense, but it might be a difficult thing to do. Or are we all past the point? Again, you know, there's so much decline in organized religion anyway. Is there any way that anything like that could ever be a starter, Karen?
I don't even know how that conversation would begin. Only because, to your very point, the churches, although some of them are associated with vast amounts of money, individual churches don't have a lot. And I'm sure that they have, I know that the Catholic Church has some creative accounting to make sure that they will always cry poor. So I just don't think that's a political battle worth fighting. And I do, like Alex said, just given the rate of attendance at churches, I think that we're going to see a natural transition of those properties go into other uses.
And I want to ask something, Karen, again, I think you might have the answer to this. So for a while, Josh Matlow, current city council, he said he was exploring going for the federal seat in St. Paul's, which Carolyn Bennett is vacating. During that time, I live in that area, and I got a lot of complaints from residents who said he was basically AWOL for the very mundane and boring things that they usually call their counselor for. But now he said, no, he's not going to do it. So I'm assuming that the Liberal Party said, you're not our person, get out. Karen, do you think that's likely what happened?
Well, I don't know, but that's certainly a possibility. And I know that Carolyn Bennett's assistant had expressed interest in seeking the nomination. And so perhaps there was some type of discussion about having her instead of Josh, or Josh just decided he didn't want to incur any more debt, or he would, you know, I don't know, but that is certainly one scenario that is likely.
It is apparently Chrystia Freeland's former chief of staff.
I thought it was Carolyn Bennett. I knew that there was a Liberal aide that was interested in running.
Yeah.
I find it pretty surprising that he's not going for it and that the Liberals wouldn't want him. I mean, I grew up in that riding, and, you know, I've kind of, my opinion on him have gone up and down. But I think he won his ward, you know, by
biggest plurality.
Yeah, like, I think he's very popular. I don't know why, but he seems like a sure thing to win the nomination and to win the riding. So it's something that I don't understand. Yeah.
David, do you have a view?
No, I don't have any knowledge of why Josh doesn't want to. And I have to say that my knowledge of the inner workings of the Liberal Party are pretty minimal. So I don't think I can offer any wise thoughts on it. I think I know Josh, and I know the work he does, and I've heard you take a shot at him from time to time.
Yeah.
But my experience, quite frankly, has been he's an energetic, knowledgeable and really good member. I've had to call him on a couple of what you would call mundane matters, and he was really very good. So there we are. I think he enjoys the work and maybe doesn't want to go and live in Ottawa.
All possible explanations. I'm looking at the clock. We're basically out of time, but my question is, it's a by-election in St. Paul's, and is the date fixed, or just it has to be called by a certain place? That's a technical question. Does anybody have the answer?
Yeah, it has to be called. There is a time frame that has to be called by from the date that the current member stepped down, and it's 4 months. And so, but I don't know when that clock starts ticking, because I don't exactly know when Carolyn Bennett officially resigned her seat, but it's 4 months from that time that a by-election needs to be called.
Yeah, because I also think, if I'm not mistaken, that the Conservatives basically just appointed someone. And I'm thinking that by-election will be a good indicator of what we're seeing in federal polls.
I don't think so. I think the Conservatives always say, oh, we could try to knock it off. It's a very safe Liberal seat.
Well, St. Paul's has been back and forth, at least in my time.
Yeah.
Barbara McDougall was the member there for...
I covered it that year, 84,
yeah,
when she got
it. Not in my lifetime, though, so I think that says something.
Well, young man.
Don't you sit around with us old people.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I think world events have shifted the view of that riding in terms of who they will support politically. And I don't know that the Liberals are going to lose the seat, but it's going to be a fight.
Well, yeah, no, I'm thinking that just given what our polls are saying about the Conservatives beating the Liberals and a whole whack of other things, you know, I would have thought that the Conservatives would put somebody really high profile in there and give it a shot. But I don't think that's what's going to happen. Anyway, I'm looking at the clock. We're almost out of time. Great talking to you all, as always. Thank you so much, David Crombie.
Thanks, Liv. Thank you.
Karen Stintz and Alex Blumenstein.
Thank you.
Okay, we're taking a break. And when we come back, it's not all about me, but I had a really hellish evening getting back from a lovely little vacay in the sun. And what the heck is going on at Pearson Airport? We'll talk about that when we return.
You're listening to an exclusive podcast of Fight Back on Zoomer Radio. Heard weekdays from noon to one. Fight Back with Libby Znaimer on Zoomer Radio.
Welcome back. And I got a lot of welcome backs today, returning after a week's holiday in the sun. Well, we came back Tuesday evening, and it was chaos at Pearson Airport, worse than during the pandemic. And you would think that no one had an inkling that thousands of people were arriving at around the same time. Now, our flight was late, okay, over an hour late, but that is hardly unusual. And there were very few staffers in the customs hall. And I know that is the jurisdiction of the Canada Border Services Agency. And yes, those are the same folks who brought us ArriveCan and the scandal. And we will be getting to that as well. But I last traveled in the summer and it was much better. And I'm just talking to people here and they've traveled when it was much better. But huge influx of people. We lined up at those kiosks. So you go through the kiosks and they give you a receipt. And normally an agent checks the receipt as you exit the hall. Well, this time there were at least three separate, very crowded, long lines, excuse me, at the end of which there was an agent sort of barely glancing at the same receipt. And frankly, I feel lucky that I didn't catch something there. It was so crowded. And no politician in Ottawa seems to want to talk about this. We do, though. And if you had a similarly bad experience trying to get home, give us a shout. Or what do you think about this? The number's 416-360-0740. Toll-free 1-866-740-4740. We're going to talk to a number of people, but first let's go to Sean Davidson, who is the spokesperson for the Greater Toronto Airports Authority. Hi, Sean. Thanks so much for being with us.
Hi, Libby. I appreciate it.
Okay, so what I know that this is not on you. It's on the border services. But I'm curious about what's the communication between the airport, which would know that a lot of people are about to come in, and the border services that needs to process them. How does that work?
Yeah, so firstly, I'm sorry to hear that you had a bad experience at the airport this weekend. We are in communication very often with our agencies at the airport, like CBS, for example. And I know that you mentioned here, for example, your flight was late, and this could be a factor that led to something like this happening on the weekend. So for example, if the CBSA, I don't want to speak too much for their operations, but they would be staffing towards what is expected for the flight volume. And let's say your flight and six other flights arriving from destinations, the airlines had delayed those flights as well. Sometimes what can happen is all of a sudden we now have six flights that weren't supposed to arrive at the same time arriving at the airport. That can cause delays in the customs hall. But when things like this happen, the CBSA can reach out to the Greater Toronto Airports Authority. We are always there to try our best to help assist, and we can deploy a team of people to try and get people through faster. But ultimately, the operation in the CBSA customs hall is up to them.
Yeah, I mean, it was very confusing. There were very few agents in the hall. It was even hard to see where you were supposed to go and why next. As I said, you know, they had all those, you know, those mazes that you go through. And again, something that in the past, I mean, again, it's the border services, where you would have had maybe one agent looking at your receipt from the kiosk. You know, why are three of them now?
Yeah, I mean, again, I can't speak to too much of their staffing requirements on that day. And that, again, could come down to simple as a rush hour in the terminal. So let's say you arrived with six other flights at the same time that were unexpected to arrive at that time. But there are a number of measures in place that we've put over the last year, because we've taken feedback like this from passengers, and we put a number of measures in place. So there are things like, when you're coming to the airport, we have YYZ Express now, where you can book your spot in the security line, so you can go to a different line. If you're heading down to the States, you can go in mobile passport control. We have live wait time dashboards. Even if your flight, you're on the aircraft and you're arriving to your gate, you can go to our website now and actually see how long the anticipated time is in that wait hall. But the reality is, at the end of the day, on some of our busiest days at Toronto Pearson, there's 150,000 people coming through our doors. That's to put that in perspective, that's like the entire city of Barrie. So there are rush hours. It's no different than like the 4:27 or the 4:01 in the morning. There are periods, and we do everything we can to try and manage that flow and work with our agencies to manage their rush peaks as well.
Final question. Do you know what percentage of flights are late? I mean, it seems to me that a lot of, a lot of them are. Possibly a majority of them, and where they come from. You know, there was a delay in Punta Cana. The plane arrived late, and then there were, I don't even know what the other issues were. But what percentage of flights are late, or what percentage of flights are on time arriving? Do you know?
I don't have a specific number, and the reason for that is that it can be a number of factors. For example, you know, a flight in Punta Cana could be late because of an issue departing there with maybe the baggage weren't able to get on the plane in time. So there are so many factors that lead into the airlines having to delay or cancel a flight. But from an airport perspective, we are always working on the things that we can control. So we are working with the agencies, the airlines, CBSA, CATSA, they're the people who do the security screening to make sure that when people come to the airport, that everybody here is well-staffed and ready to go. I mean, for example, we held a job fair last week, trying to help all of our partners be able to get staffed up because we have the busy spring and summer seasons just ahead of us. We're coming out of the holidays where, thankfully, we really didn't have to deal with too much winter weather, but things have been operating really smooth for the most part at Toronto Pearson. But again, there are times where things get busy, and it's to be expected. It's Canada's largest and busiest airport, and we're dealing with thousands and thousands of people who are coming through our doors every day.
Okay, well, let's hope that a lot of people don't have the experience that we had this week. Sean, thank you so much for being with us.
No worries. I really appreciate your time.
Okay, bye-bye. We are taking another short break. We're going to continue this conversation on the other side of the break, and we'll also get to the latest on that ArriveCan scandal.
You're listening to an exclusive podcast of Fight Back on Zoomer Radio. Heard weekdays from noon to one. Fight Back with Libby Znaimer on Zoomer Radio.
Welcome back. We've been talking about chaos at Pearson Airport, getting through customs on the way home from a nice holiday. And we've just heard from the spokesman for the GTAA, and he said, well, if a bunch of flights are all late, even though, frankly, we all expect our flights to be late, then they can all be happening and arriving at the same time unexpectedly, and that's what can cause this chaotic crush that we experienced. So, yeah, that's possible. But the question is, you know, we kept hearing that all the problems we saw during the pandemic were solved, things moved smoothly, and that was certainly not the case. I'd like to bring in Marty Firestone, who's the president of Travel Secure, and Jason Leader, conservative strategist and president of Enterprise. Hey, guys, thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Okay, Marty, so are you surprised by the experience that I described?
No, because I can duplicate that experience with one added little twist. Also ran into a similar problem, but how do you like this one? It says my bags will be on carousel number 10, and I sit at 10 for a half an hour until I see someone walking out that I was on the plane with and said, they're over on carousel 3. That name was still on 10, Air Canada flight number so-and-so. No announcement that it has moved over to carousel 3, and I'm sitting there like an idiot waiting over a half an hour when the bag was probably out after 10 minutes.
We thought we were smart. We went with a carry-on. So that wasn't an issue, even though it's expensive to take carry-ons now. Jason, what's your take? I mean, we've had all this, I won't say propaganda, what's another word? We've had all these announcements about how all these problems have been solved, but yeah. I don't think they have been solved.
Hit and miss for sure. I think I fly enough that I see a little bit of this, sometimes good, sometimes bad. The thing that drives, I laughed, there's just inexplicable things happen there, though. I'd be interested in your take. Like, do you remember a year or two ago you walked into that hall and there was all new machines and they're incredibly slow to take your picture, and like the other machines were like a year old or something like that? Like, how many tens of billions of dollars did these machines cost? I've been through it all. We've all been through it all. Those crushing times, it's brutal. And you just, it's inexplicable. You're standing there like herded like cattle. You don't know what's going on. And, you know, there's just no way out of it. That's the worst part. And then there's other times too, where you come in and the problem that Marty just described, right? Sometimes weather's bad late at night, whatever. It takes forever to get those bags. And, you know, I don't know what you're supposed to do. There's been people that I've been talking to that have, you know, had to wait hours for bags at the airport. And, you know, you hear the horror stories. You don't hear any of the good stuff. But, oh, my goodness, at least the GTAA guy came and faced the music today for you.
He did. And, again, Sean Davidson, we appreciate that. Thanks. It's more than certainly we're getting from politicians who are allegedly in charge of this and want to be on top of fixing it. It just seems endemic. And I don't know. I mean, it's funny that you're mentioning those machines, Jason. So eventually, after on the third try or something, it took my picture, but it wouldn't take my husband's picture. It sort of came out with a little square and an X. And then I chased down a staffer to say, what do we do now? And he says, don't worry about it.
We don't really need the picture. We really need the picture, but we don't really need the picture.
And,
so
and then they look at his passport. It's like, yeah, he does look like that.
That's so funny.
So is this, Marty, is this what people should expect? We're coming up on March break. That's going to be busy.
Yeah, it's even going to get worse. You remember the old adage, what time's the plane landing, and then we'll get in the car and get out, come to pick you up? I mean, that's out the window now. Even if you could be calling as you're on the runway landing, there could be hours in between that and when you're ready to walk out of the airport. So the bottom line is, accept this. This is evidently the new way of life post-COVID, and it's not getting any better. In fact, it could even get worse. Combination of climate and weather that's going on these days and just all the staffing issues, they're still all there, absolutely.
Yeah, and if you choose not to burden a family member, there was a big price hike on the way home. We were shocked at what it cost us to get home, but at least we got into a comfortable car.
It's gone up too, no doubt.
Everything has gone up. I'll take a call from Howard in Kitchener. Hi, Howard.
Yeah, I just wanted to relate with you a little bit. I've run into the same problems. I'm a very frequent flyer. I usually go south about 6-7 times a year.
Nice.
I only stay a week at a time because I've got too many responsibilities here back home. But anyway, I found it difficult in the same situation that one of your gentlemen found in the carousels for the baggage. It started off at 9, then it went to 3, then it went to 7, and we still had to wait an hour. They moved us back and forth and changed the signs and all that stuff. But that's frustrating. Can I mention a company name, the company flight?
Yeah, go ahead.
Well, Sunwing.
Yeah, we were on Sunwing, yeah.
Well, Sunwing, I've been flying with them for 15 years, give or take. And as I said, 5-6 times, 7 times a year sometimes. But anyway, they now use a bus back and forth from their other area where they keep their plane.
Yep.
And that's very frustrating because they pack them in like sardines in these buses. And they have to shovel you over from the main, you know, area where you check in over to where the planes are, and then they have to bring you back again to the other section where you check out.
Exactly. And on the way, when we were in Punta Cana, they put us on the bus and then they took us off the bus and put us on the bus again. But
Yeah, well, I'm really considering Buffalo maybe as an alternative. I still want to travel. I'm thinking of my next trip now in the next couple days, I hope, to book. But I do it last minute sometimes. But anyway, I'm thinking about Buffalo, but I have no idea if they're any better. I'm in Kitchener, so I can go either way. You know,
okay,
Buffalo.
Well, let us know how it goes, Howard. Let's take a call from Helen in Toronto. Hi, Helen.
Oh, I've got a good one for you. I went away for Passover and told them I'm flying Air Canada. I went the day before, and please keep the barbecue going because with Air Canada, I don't know what time I'm going to get there. That was on the way going. On the way home, I checked my checked bag, and the other one I thought I had with me had fallen off the cart. And I won't tell you what we went through. I knew I was going to miss my flight, try to rebook. No, we can't do that. You had luggage? Sorry, we can't do that. Long and short is that eventually I did get on a later flight, and when I got to Toronto, and when I went to identify my bag, it was my bag that should have been shipped, not my carry-on. I came to Toronto and had to walk the airport to find my carry-on.
Okay, Helen, sorry to hear about that. moving right along, sort of related, because some of this chaos is Canada Border Services, and of course, there's ArriveCan, and we have had yet more revelations on ArriveCan. Yesterday, we heard that there was a program to give business to Indigenous contractors. That's being reviewed, and today we heard that the CEO of the company that got millions in contracts was actually a staffer at the Department of National Defense, Jason, and Anita Anand, who was head of procurement and all this other stuff. She none of this crossed her desk.
Sure, it didn't. So I think it's even worse than you've just described. And I want to make sure that everyone understands what's happened here. This guy who's a DND staffer who works at the Department of National Defense or whatever, designs a program for, you know, Indigenous people he helps design it to sort of get federal funds. Then he, as an outside contractor, it applies to that program, and he and a business partner and some colleagues, they didn't get millions. They got $400 million. So in addition to what's happening with ArriveCan, and, you know, as you know, Libby, ArriveCan was supposed to make everything, streamline everything, and make everything really smooth at the airport for you. So not only was it a massive failure, this guy, these revelations are explosive. The idea that someone designed a program, then benefited to it to the tune of $400 million. In this particular instance, we know that they, faulty work or awful work. The ArriveCan app is awful. And then, and that no one knew about it, either in the civil service or government. And it took these revelations, essentially journalists starting to call and saying, hey, what's going on with this thing to cover this or to uncover this? It is a massive scandal. I always thought Anita Anand was one of their better ministers. I thought she's done very well over the last little bit in public works and in D&D and that kind of stuff. This kind of thing is just, I don't know that, not that she can survive, but I'll just say this is a real black mark. And I don't know. This is as bad as it gets. Like, I don't know which scandal to focus on, ArriveCan or, you know, some of the other things that are happening in Ottawa.
Or the spies, the Winnipeg spies that finally we're learning something about.
The thought crimes bill that they put out today. I don't know what to, like, the Trudeau government is not doing well, but this particular one is offensive. And I think it's going to have a long tail. I think people are going to dig really into it.
Well, Anita Anand, her reputation is that she's really organized. She's some kind of almost management guru. She's competent, you know, not that flashy. And, you know, this puts the lie to all of that. She was in two portfolios that should have had an inkling about this. And
I don't even know what to
NADA.
Say about it, Libby. Right? I don't even know what to say about it. To your point, like she has a business background. I think she was a VP for a big firm going into this. She's got a sterling reputation around Ottawa for management. They moved her out of into some tough stuff, right? She came in as a junior sort of MP. They moved her into public works. She did a good job, presumably, during the pandemic about that. We're finding out that, you know, things like the ArriveCan app were an absolute disaster. Then she moves over to D&D. She's got a decent reputation over there. We find out that this thing is indefensible, right? It's indefensible. Even the Liberals know this is indefensible. I don't know what they're going to do. I don't know how they're going to handle it. But I just say, like, you know, we're at the 8 to 9 years into the Trudeau government, and every single day something gets uncovered that is just absolutely impossible for anyone to explain, you know, in a regular way. And so, you know, a lot of it's one of the reasons why they're at sort of 25% in the polls, right?
Well, exactly. And, you know, when we first heard the revelations, I wasn't, you know, people forget. And I wasn't sure that this thing was going to have legs. But at this point, I think it does. And that was the suspension of this guy. And I'm wondering if he's been suspended with pay, because that's the way it usually happens. You know, we had heard.
You know who the happiest guys are today? Libby, sorry to interrupt. You know who the happiest guys are today? It's GC Strategy. The guys who last week were in the news for billing $10 million for work they didn't do on the app. Like, that's what's so sad now. You know, people used to make fun of Trump about this. Like, the last scandal, like, got sort of usurped by overshadowed by the next scandal. Like, the guys who were in a scandal last week called before Parliament, like, they're sitting up with their feet up today saying, well, now it's this guy's turn. He stole $8 million. We only stole 10 and we stole it last week. Like, it's unbelievable what's happening up in Ottawa right now.
Marty, do you think any of this affects the traveling public?
Not at all. It's a fitting end to really this ArriveCan doc. And I was thinking of the quarantine hotels also as another fiasco when that happened. But we, as the traveling public, don't necessarily, you know, it's a shame. And $400 million, God knows where it went. But at the end of the day, we just want to get on the plane. We want to get the best fare to get on the plane. We want it to be on time. And that's it. So crazy world we're in right now.
Well, it seems that that's not happening. It getting on the plane and it being on time and any of that. Jason, I mean, am I being far-fetched? Do you draw, I mean, you have ArriveCan and it's Border Services Agency, and you have these what look like other failures. Is this an agency that just can't do its job?
I think that's one of the problems that Ottawa's run into, and I think it's going to be one of the themes of the politics for the next little bit, is these guys and the CBSA is just an example. Like, management has sort of gone awry up there, right? Like, basic management, getting stuff done, just doesn't seem to happen anywhere. The politics of Ottawa for the last 8 or 10 years have mostly been about symbols, have mostly been about values, have mostly been about sort of communication and, you know, that kind of thing. I think people are starting to understand that there's a cost to some of that, right? Like, poor management actually matters in the public service. I mean, the federal government's only in charge of, you know, defense, borders, travel, some big infrastructure stuff. Like, it's got a very limited set of things that it actually has to do other than transfer money. And then we're finding out that a bunch of them are done. I mean, last week, the federal minister said, I'm not going to build any more roads.
Yeah.
This week, we've got the federal government sort of having to admit defeat on CBSA issues and border services issues and a massive app that they've done. The quarantine hotels are a great, it's just fiasco after fiasco. And I think that's starting to really hurt Mr. Trudeau publicly.
Yep. I'm looking at the clock. We're basically out of time. Yes or no question to Jason last. Do you think that this failure of management has something to do with people working from home, or I say sometimes working in quotes? Yes or no?
Because if you don't manage properly, working from home can work. Hybrid workplaces can work. I'm working on one of my own company. But if you don't manage and stay on top of things, it can absolutely fall apart. And that for sure is happening. The public service is not going to the office. It's working from home. Downtown Ottawa is a ghost town these days.
Okay, as is a lot of downtown Toronto. I'm looking at the clock. We're out of time. Thank you so much, Marty Firestone and Jason Leader. And that is all the time we have for today. Free for All Friday is coming up tomorrow. I want to hear more of your travel horror stories because we couldn't get to all of them. And I want to hear your take about ArriveCan and also about the revelations about basically the spies, the two scientists fired from that Winnipeg lab for working for China, and nobody else was fired there either. We'll have that tomorrow, Free for All Friday. That's all the time we have for today.
You're listening to an exclusive podcast of Fight Back on Zoomer Radio. Heard weekdays from noon to one. This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show.